Tonight, we're going to talk about the work of Daniel Davis, From Ancient Aliens to the Shift, The Grand Unified Theory, trying to explain some of the things that have happened since the modern era of UFO sightings and his analysis. Daniel is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Daniel Davis, of course, trained in mathematics. He's been researching extraterrestrials for years. He gets his knowledge and experience from commuting freely with others around the planet. He's been all over the place. Daniel continues to write about the existence of visitations, contacts, and here he is on Coast to Coast. Hey, Daniel, how are you?
How you doing, Mr. Norrie?
Good. Looking forward to this. From Ancient Aliens to the Shift. Tell me, how'd you get into this?
Well, throughout my life, as I've mentioned, I've lived a lot of places, so I've heard a lot of legends. I've seen a lot of stuff. About 30 years ago in college, I first read Eric Von Daniken's Chariots of the Gods. And, in fact, my first college essay was on that. And so I've been kind of keeping tabs ever since then. And then again, like I said, living overseas, after college, I lived in Congo for a couple of years, then in Romania for 3 years, then in Pakistan for 3.5 years. And so I'd heard legends different places. And my sense of spirituality was starting to kind of change. And I'm very open-minded about these kind of things. So, you know, I'd had all these experiences. And while I was in college, I was also got real big into studying science books. I read all of Carl Sagan's.
Yeah, me too. I just dived into all those, too.
Right. And so I've been kind of keeping track on this stuff for, you know, the last 30 years, basically. And I'd also done some research on some other writing projects over the last, I don't know, 8 years or so that, let me just put it this way, that we're not hearing all the truth that there is about a lot of subjects out there from powers that be.
And we're going to get into some of those reasons why, because
right.
You've done a very thorough job tracking that down. Mm-hmm. I guess your mathematics background pays off here.
Yes, it does, because I think very logically, and so basically the book is laid out like a argument, you know, where, okay, there's so much evidence, and, well, I'm sure we'll talk about that too, but there's so much evidence that things have been going on since at least Roswell. And in the first chapter, I mentioned cases all over the world that have been witnessed by very, very credible people. So obviously something's going on. So that was the start. And then, okay, if it's been going on, then how long has it been going on?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we get into all the ancient evidence. Some of it's hard physical evidence, structures and whatnot. Some of it's in the legends, you know, mythology that may be, you know, hints in disguise, so to speak. Okay, so it seems to have been going on for a long time.
And you know what? I think you have to conclude that. I'm not sure yet. And maybe you'll be able to help us to define what's been going on. But there's no question people have seen things, and they've been going on since almost the beginning of mankind.
Exactly. Right. Going back as far as we have what could be called historical written records, which would be like the cave paintings. And I mentioned the Sago Canyon ones and the ones in Italy and ones in Australia. So this is happening all over the world, and I don't know what else they could be. I suppose they, you know, the ancient people had a very, very big sense of creativity. But when you look at them from this aspect, I don't know what else they could be. There's been things going on forever, you know, as far as we can tell.
And going to these other countries that you've been in, Frank and Daniel, all over from. You know, you've been in Croatia, right?
No, Pakistan. Romania. I've driven close to there, but
on the
Romania,
close to the border, at least.
Yeah. they're right there.
Do people all say the same things, that these are strange objects? They don't know what they are. I mean, do you find that there's a overwhelming consensus here?
Yeah, actually, more than here in the United States, because one of the things we're not hearing about is just general news. We're not hearing, I mean, for example, if you get a news feed from overseas, from an overseas newspaper, say, in United Kingdom, you know, Guardian or something like that, you're going to hear a lot more news that you don't hear here in the United States. So people overseas generally are even more open to this than the average American is because they've heard so much more. Give you another example real quick. Mexico, I mean, most of the people in Mexico have no trouble whatsoever. I mean, including pilots and whatnot, they have no trouble whatsoever believing we're being visited by extraterrestrials, you know, because they're hearing a lot more than we hear here in the United States.
These extraterrestrials that are tied into these rumors of government involvement, are they real in your opinion, or is something else going on?
They've got to be real. You know, there's, again, so much evidence out there and more coming out all the time because the people that were in the military, especially in the 1940s and 50s, they're getting of the age where they don't care anymore about government threats or they're just trying to clear their conscience.
Yeah.
They're saying, look, I saw this stuff back then and I've been hiding it for 40, 50 years or whatever. And they're like, enough. You know, I want people to know because this is important. Something's going on. And so, yeah, there's more and more evidence coming to light all the time.
We've talked over the last several years, of course, and a lot recently of the work of the late Zachariah Sitchin.
Right.
And, you know, his theories of how they came here and why, which could very well be the first major visitations.
Right.
In your research, Daniel, did you come across anything similar to that, to Sitchin's theories of the Anunnaki?
Well, there's basically cultures all over the world that talk about something like that, that the Star Brothers or the Star People or something, in some cases they're called gods, brought them information. There's legends about giants all over the world, and some people theorize that the Anunnaki were giants in comparison, even in the Bible. I mean, you know, basically all of the major religions around the world have aspects of them which could be referring to extraterrestrial contact. Pretty much every culture has got something that could be that. It's either that or angels. But, you know, something I pointed out in the book is that, okay, a lot of people, especially Christian type kind of people, they believe in angels.
Yes.
But do you ever see a picture of an angel? Do you ever see videos of an angel? No. But on the other hand, we do have abundant, overwhelming evidence, pictures, legends, whatever you want to call it, of extraterrestrial visitation. And again,
are you saying that angels don't exist, or that we just can't prove that?
Well, I'm saying that angels may be something else. They may be extraterrestrials.
Okay.
They could be also kind of spiritual beings, because something I didn't touch on much here in the book. I don't think I touched on it at all, actually. In the book, talking about ghosts, television, for example, there's all kinds of programs on ghosts, you know, celebrity ghosts.
They're everywhere.
And they're everywhere. So they seem to exist, but you hear very, very, very little about people who say they've seen angels, but yet everybody believes in angels.
Right.
So if everybody believes in angels, but there's very little proof of it, why would it not be more acceptable to believe in extraterrestrials when there is so much proof about them?
See, I think a lot of people want to believe in angels for a couple of reasons, beyond the religious implications, of course. And that is, you know, the faith of, you know, some kind of guardian out there.
Right.
And then, you know, Daniel, I get a lot of calls from people whenever we've opened up our angelic hotline or something like that, mm-hmm. who have truly come across with some incredible miracle stories.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, but again, we really don't know exactly what's doing that. Maybe there's something else, some other force, I think, in the universe. And maybe it's a combination of both. Maybe angels exist.
Yes, exactly. It could be some kind of extraterrestrial presence, and it could be some kind of a spiritual, you know, like a ghost, because many of the cases with ghosts, okay, you always hear the, you know, the Hollywood, you know, scary versions of ghost things, but a lot of the ghost stories talk about, you know, people coming back to let them know that they're okay and life goes on after life and, you know, no need to worry about death kind of a thing.
Well, with Daniel Davis, author of the book From Ancient Aliens to the Shift, do you think government is indeed holding back information they're not telling us?
Absolutely, positively, no doubt.
What's their reason for it? Some have theorized, we're going to demand free energy. We're going to demand high technology. I think they're afraid of controlling us.
Yes, on all accounts, and then some. Okay, let's start with the basic. The first thing most people say that they've been saying for decades is, well, you know, they don't want people to go into a panic thinking about, you know, aliens, you know, like the War of the Worlds or whatever, that they're going to come in and date us, like Independence Day and whatnot. So they're just trying to keep people from panicking. That's one reason. Another reason, again, this goes back to the 40s and 50s where, you know, after Roswell and whatnot, the invasion of Washington, D.C. in 1952 and such, where the government was basically embarrassed that there's all this stuff happening and they don't know what it is and they can't do anything about it. I mean, in encounter after encounter that's caught on radar or video or whatever, there's UFOs that are just playing with the best technology that we have to get. You know, they'll send up fighters after them, and there's no, the fighters can't come close to touching these UFOs. So that's another reason that the government's, you know, embarrassed about all these things that are happening and that they can't do anything about it. However, there's a lot more than that. As you mentioned, the fuel thing, the zero points or the free energy.
Yes.
This was discussed quite a bit by Dr. Stephen Greer with his Disclosure Project. There's some great material there on that website. I highly, highly recommend it. That would make even things like solar and wind power obsolete. Okay, because they're talking about a box about the size of, a refrigerator, maybe even smaller than that, can provide power for a whole neighborhood.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
No energy input and no pollution output. So that would be even, you know, it would be even more effective than, say, solar or wind.
Daniel, big business would hate that, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, you can imagine the utility companies trying to figure out, how can we make money on this? See, that's one of the things that got Nikola Tesla.
Right.
When Tesla came up with that idea.
He's one of my big heroes.
Yeah, right. Me too. And they couldn't figure out if he was going to do this and draw energy out of the atmosphere, out of the universal ether. How are they going to make money on this if they give it to people?
Yeah. Right. That's why J.P. Morgan had originally financed him. But when Tesla made it clear that he was looking for a source of power that would be free, available to everybody everywhere.
That's the wrong word.
He dropped it.
Yeah.
He dropped it because he wasn't going to make any money on it. Right.
He did use the wrong phrase. He should never have said free.
That's a big one. And if you look at, you know, our government basically is under severe influence, let me put it this way, from lobbyists of various industries, corporations, and whatnot. So they're definitely going to steer us away from anything that they're not going to be able to make money on. But that's just even one of the – that's just like the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, that's just a piece of it.
Right. I mentioned in my book, because, I've done before I started writing this book, I've done a lot of research on other things that we're not hearing about. So, for example, Chapter 3, which is called Lackluster Leadership, I started it off talking about a day in May 1994 when I was living in Congo, and a friend and I went out on the Congo River to pan for diamonds because I'd seen this documentary about the whole diamond trade and what a crock it is. I don't want to get too much into that, but so that sent me out, me and my friend, looking for diamonds, right? And from there, I started doing all kinds of research. And
that's dangerous, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Which, if you look at the people that have had accidents or disappeared or whatever, there's a long list of those people.
That's true.
So I looked into all kinds of different subjects. I mean, from basic just social control, the kind of things that we're not hearing about, how so-called democracy has progressed, and I mean, from ancient times when we had, you know, kings and whatnot up to now, how it's progressed. That medicine is another one, and I'm living proof on the medical thing. I'm 49 years old, and I have not taken a single aspirin, cough drop, nothing, zero, in 8 years.
And I bet you don't get vaccines, do you?
Absolutely not.
No.
I do not know. Those are all the stuff that they're putting in those. Forget it. There's so many, and again, as a mathematician, the correlation, I've seen the graphs, I've seen the correlations, I've seen the numbers, the correlation between diseases, various diseases, autism, for example, which for just speaking of autism, there have been cases already here in the United States and in Italy where the court found that vaccines cause autism, among other things.
Well, don't you think that's also then a reason why the disclosure is being held back? Because people would demand, if ETs are coming here, you know that they have somehow beaten most diseases.
Exactly. On the diseases thing, I could tell you it's mostly what you eat and drink and what you should and shouldn't do. But, and again, that's just the tip of the iceberg, because if it was made public that we're not hearing the truth about this particular subject, you're going to start asking, how many more subjects are we not hearing the truth about? And there's a ton of them. And something else that I mentioned in the book that would be made fairly obvious, okay, extraterrestrials, they're going to have the technology to listen in on all these government channels that the average American is not privy to. I mean, for example, you've heard of NASA. There's been sightings where, I don't remember exactly which space shuttle mission it was, but one of the astronauts said, we have a UFO here. And next thing you know, they switch it to the secure channel so that
right.
we can't listen into it.
That's right, instantly.
Now, the ETs, with their technology, they're going to be able, and telepathy, because that if you assuming that a lot of these contacts, you know, the actual close encounters kind of contacts, are true, the people, abductees or whatever, talk about the extraterrestrials using telepathy. So between their technology and their telepathy, they're going to know a lot more than the average person, and this stuff's going to come out. And so it's going to be a huge, I mean, cosmically huge box of worms once we start looking into, okay, well, what else are we not hearing about? That's why I finished that chapter 3, The Lackluster Leadership, with a quote, you know, about Gloria Steinem that said, the truth will set you free, but first it's going to piss you off, something along those lines. And that's what we're looking at. There's going to be a lot of unhappy people. When you look at all the consequences of, for example, I mean, the pollution from petroleum and, you know, fossil fuel use in general, the stuff that we could have avoided, the wars and all the illnesses caused by these things, there's going to be a lot of unhappy people out there. And, again, it's not just the fuel thing.
Well, and then how do you explain it? If you're government, how do you explain that you have withheld this information for so many years? How do you start? What do you say?
Well, you know, here's the thing I've noticed in all of these, what you would call conspiracy theories. There's always a good cover story. Otherwise, it's too blatant. Okay, so the information comes out too quick. There's always a good cover story. So if nothing else, they could say what I started with, you know, the argument that, well, we didn't want people to panic, and we were kind of embarrassed that we didn't know what this was and that we can't do anything about it, kind of a thing. So my guess is they would start with some kind of explanation along those lines.
There'd be a good cover.
Exactly. Exactly. Otherwise it becomes too obvious.
Or, folks, these ETs are coming down, abducting people and eating them, and we didn't want to scare you.
Exactly.
Something like that.
Right.
And maybe they are coming down and eating us. Who knows?
There could be. I tried to look at all the evidence, you know, positive and negative, and the evidence is overwhelmingly positive. I mean, there's so many ways that they could have wiped us out had they wanted to, or at least seriously impacted population here on Earth without having to do anything.
Every ancient culture talks in some form or fashion of some kind of visitation. It's up for interpretation, but
right.
It's all there, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, again, we talked about this a little while ago, talking about mentions in the Bible or the Sumerian tablets and whatnot. Are they angels? Or are they ETs? I mean, the argument has been made other places that if you put yourself in the shoes of people living, you know, 5,000 years ago or however long ago it was, they didn't know about any kind of...
No. Daniel, hold on. We're going to come right back. Take a peek at our television show, Beyond Belief, if you would. Internet-based, all kinds of special guests. You're going to enjoy it. Simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. At the top, click hosts, and then the TV button opens up, and there you go, beyond belief. Plus, you can look at, for 10 days free, incredible videos that the network there has available to you. We're going to be back in a moment, more with Daniel Davis, as we talk about prophecy now, his work from Ancient Aliens to the Shift, the Grand Unified Theory. And here we are. We've got Daniel Davis with us as we talk about, of course, the visitations. We're going to get into prophecy in a moment as well. Maybe, Daniel, there's something more serious, more dangerous about this ET presence. What do you think?
The most dangerous outcome I can think of in this regard, regarding this whole subject, is how angry people are going to be when they find out how much information has been kept from us.
Yes.
I think that's the most dangerous thing. If ETs were a danger in themselves, I think we would have had better indications of it by now. In fact, I think there's maybe proof, I mean physical proof, of their intentions. Okay, now, let's talk about asteroids for a minute. You know,
right.
Asteroids, comets, this is a big fear. The odds of getting killed by an asteroid are about the same as getting killed by a tornado. I mean, that's what scientists will tell you, okay?
Well, that's pretty high as far as I'm concerned.
Right. And so scientists have already talked about ways that we could move asteroids out of the way. There's solar cells, there's planting a rocket on it that would push it out of the way. Worst case scenario, blow it up with a nuclear bomb, but then they get many pieces raining down. The point is that our scientists have already come up with ways that, given enough time, we could move one of these asteroids out of the way, right? Okay, so if ETs wanted to cause a lot of damage or reduce population, it would be real easy for them to push one of these asteroids into our flight line of the Earth, okay, without us ever even knowing. Yet, the two biggest ones that have happened, the Tunguska event of June 30th, 1908. The scientists are still kind of up in the air about what exactly it was. But the point is that it happened over the most godforsaken place on Earth. If you had to have something hit the Earth, I can't think of any place better than someplace like Siberia. Because if you put it into the ocean, which
exactly.
is 70% of the planet.
You got tsunami time.
Exactly. You're going to have tsunamis that will wipe out millions of people. And pretty much anywhere else that it would have hit, it would have wiped out a lot of people. But what happened? I think there's maybe one case. I think it was a reindeer that died. But as far as I can tell, no humans were killed. Okay. And then the next one before that, talking about the meteor crater, Barringer Meteor Crater in northern Arizona, happened about 50,000 years ago. Well, 50,000 years ago, there were no humans that we know of on North America. So, again, if you wanted to plant one of these things someplace so that it wouldn't hurt anybody, perfect place to do it, out in the middle of nowhere, Arizona.
Good point.
So, again, looking at this comes from a mathematician, you know, looking at the statistics and probability here. If 70% of the Earth is covered by water, and therefore it could have caused a huge tsunami, the rest of the Earth, I don't know, there's 20, maybe 25% that's fairly well occupied, that something like that could have killed a lot of people. So we're talking about like 5%. In each case, 5%. Okay? That's 1 out of 20.
Hmm.
Now, one case after the other, if you look at Tunguska and look at the Barringer Crater incident, 1 out of 20 times 1 out of 20 is 1 out of 400. So the odds of two things hitting someplace where they're not going to do any damage to humans is 1 out of 400. Now, does that strike you as likely without possibly some outside influence?
Yeah.
It could happen. But more than, you know, I would not be surprised if this is the extraterrestrials' way of saying, look, you know, we could have hurt you if we wanted to, but look what happened with both of these events. They landed in places where you didn't get hurt.
Now, well, here's a question then for you. Mm-hmm. Let's assume the government's withholding. They know. They're not telling us. Why aren't the ETs clearly telling us directly? I mean, you know how easy that would be?
Right. Well, if you listen to some of the people that claim they've made contact, they have, but nobody believes them, okay?
I mean, do it in a grand scale. Land in New York. Land in Washington, D.C. Come on down to L.A.
Right.
But that's not happening like that.
Well, there's two things. Number one, maybe not enough of the planet is not ready, although something I talk about in the book is psychological conditioning. There's been enough cases, for example, the Phoenix Lights of 1997, March 13, 1997, where thousands of people, including Governor Fife Symington III himself, saw this thing, okay? They are in the process of psychologically conditioning us all over the world. As I said, if you think the United States is the only place that sees UFOs, you need to tune in.
Oh, no, it's all over the place.
They're all over the place. Yeah. Okay, so which leads me to believe that whatever's going to happen is going to happen fairly soon. Okay, so I think we're getting ready for that.
And in what form or fashion, Daniel, do you think it'll be?
As you said, I think it's going to be a grand appearance where, you know, nobody can deny it. They're going to land and come out and say, here we are. And it's going to be the kind of a situation where nobody can deny it.
Maybe like Independence Day in a friendly way, I hope.
In a friendly way, yes, correct.
Where they're over every major city at one time.
It could be something like that. Right, because, again, there's all kinds of various kinds of craft. It's not just flying saucers, small ones, big ones. It's all kinds of, you know, there's the cigar ones that are like a mile long. There's box ones. There's weird ones with things hanging out all over the place.
Can you imagine the radio show will have that name if that happens?
They might just contact you and say, hey, come on, meet us out here someplace, and boom, you know.
Off we go.
Their appearance. But the other thing is, like I said, there's going to be a lot of information that starts to come out about what we're not hearing, and there's going to be a lot of very, very angry people out there. So perhaps what they're hoping is that this kind of information gets out there so that there isn't this tsunami of violence aimed at the powers that be because of everybody finding out already. You know, one of the things I put in the book is the best thing that they could do is come down and make an appearance, like you said, and say, look, we're going to go away for about 6 months, but all the information you need to know about fuel, about medicine, about whatever, even diamonds, that kind of stuff, all the information is out there. You people just need to do a little research because, unfortunately, the average person doesn't do a whole lot of research on all the evidence that's out there, the kinds of things we're not hearing about, because if it's not on the McNews, the McMedia, whatever, it can't be true. So what they need to do is come down and say, look, all this information is already out there. We don't want to solve your problems. Because when I was writing this book, I heard a couple different places, well, I don't believe, you know, that we need saviors to come down and save us from ourselves. Okay, fair enough. I don't either. I believe, again, having done all the research that I have, the information is out there. If people would just look into it. And I'm not talking about some, you know, crank website. I'm talking about Pulitzer Prize-winning authors that I've mentioned a few of them in my book. Evan Black is one of my big heroes. His book was Internal Combustion, How Corporations and Governments Addicted the World to Oil and Derailed the Alternatives. All this information exists out there by very, very credible people. So we need to learn this information, find out what exactly we are not hearing. And that, for example, a lot of the wars, because I talk about, for example, the whole Iran story, which actually started in 1953. It did not start in 1979, like most people believe, when the radicals took over the embassy. It started in 1953 when the CIA backed, paid for, organized a coup against the democratically elected Mohammad Mossadegh and replaced him with the puppet Shah of Iran, who would comply with
everything they wanted.
With the oil, right. They wanted to keep the contract. The royalties low. Anglo-American, which is now BP. But anyway, so a lot of the wars that happen around the earth, they're completely instigated. And so basically, what the ETs need to do is come down here and say, look, this information's already out there. Do a little research because we don't want to be perceived as, you know, trying to save you, trying to tell you exactly what to do and whatnot. The information already exists. So then once we have realized how things could be instead of all the fighting and whatnot, then we would be really ready to take part in whatever cosmic community of civilizations exists. Right now, to an outside entity looking down on us, we're like little kids fighting in the playground over stupid stuff when better alternatives exist.
That could be. Now, in your book, From Ancient Aliens to the Shift, you have a couple of stories of UFO issues and UFO encounters. What are some of your favorites?
Well, I mentioned the Phoenix Lights of 1997. Again, thousands of people saw it, including the governor himself.
Yep. And he made fun of it in the beginning, but not anymore.
Yeah, and there's an article I mentioned that was actually from CNN, where he basically apologized for that. And he's been on a couple different shows, like Jim Fox's.
Well, and he was on Larry King's show with me one day. And,
right.
And
okay.
He recanted. He basically said, I made fun of it, and I made a mistake.
Right. Exactly. Right. So you know perfectly well. So that's a big one, the Phoenix Lights. Some of my other favorites would be, there's actually a couple incidents in Chicago, 2004, 2006, where, again, thousands of people. One of them was there was a
constable.
No, sorry. There was a rock concert that was letting out. And so all the people coming out of this, I mean, something like 20,000 people or something saw this thing. There was also one at the airport there in Chicago where...
That's the O'Hare case.
Yeah, credible people, pilots and whatnot, saw the thing. There's been some good ones in Mexico where lots of people saw them. There's been cases where apparently one clipped a airliner going into Mexico City. Israel is another hot spot right now. There's all kinds of different spaceships UFOs have been seen there. Some of the ones I would like to see more on, for example, the 1957 event at Edwards Air Force Base, where Colonel Gordon Cooper, the astronaut, at the time he was just a jet fighter pilot at Edwards Air Force Base. They were out there filming when this thing came and landed. And he tells us in his own words, okay, this is not just invented by somebody. He put in his own words that, you know, he saw the thing come down, land. They shot footage of it because, again, they had the camera set up. So they shot footage of it, and he was the guy that put it in the container that sent it to Washington, and poof, it disappeared. That's the last time anybody ever heard of it.
Yep, that's absolutely right.
Another great case is the Rendlesham Forest incident, 1980, December 1980, a couple different nights.
In England, right?
In England, right. Rendlesham Forest, United Kingdom, yeah, Suffolk County, where something like 80-some-odd different airmen, including the deputy base commander, Lieutenant Colonel Halt, saw it. And they also took pictures, which also were turned over and also disappeared. So there's a lot of cases. This is the kind of information I'm talking about. That there's all this information out there that we just aren't seeing. I mean, assuming, for example, the video shot at the film shot at Edwards or the pictures taken at Rendlesham Forest or wherever, assuming these things did happen as these people, credible witnesses, say they happened, can you imagine the impact on skeptics that kind of information would have?
Be huge.
It would change everything, absolutely.
It would be huge. I want to spend next hour talking with you about prophecies, Daniel, because that is a fascinating portion of your research. But as we wrap up the ET segment here, what do you think happens next? What is your gut telling you?
I think that we are in store for official contact fairly soon. Whether it happens, like I said, where they come down and kind of give us this ultimatum of, look, you've got all this information out there. You guys need to do research and realize what it is all that you're not hearing. Or whether, as you mentioned, like Independence Day in a nice way, they just suddenly make their appearance. I believe with all the sightings that have been happening that enough of the planet has been psychologically conditioned to be ready for them. And getting into the prophecies, several of the prophecies talk about the return of the Star Brothers or the gods or whatever. So I believe that in the very near future, maybe the next year or two, I'm surprised it hasn't happened. I mean, for example, you know, December 21st, 2012, that was the big one, right? Everybody's waiting for that. And I was telling people, if anything happens, it's going to be the first official contact. That's what's going to happen. But, okay, it didn't happen. But I think it's any time now, and ETs, if you're listening to this, anytime would be good.
And I don't think it's going to come from government, though.
Oh, no. No, we're going to have to go over their heads.
Well,
again, there's so much more information, that they don't want us to know, and so much more. This is just the tip of the iceberg.
Whenever you're out, Daniel, or you're meeting people, or you talk about your work, What do they say about the UFO phenomenon?
The vast, vast, vast majority. The kind of thing you don't see reflected in popular polls. People know better, okay? Very, very few diehard skeptics, mostly scientists, that for whatever reason, and I discuss some of that in the book. But the average person, you'd be surprised how many people say, oh, yeah, I like, because especially with the title, part of the title, you know, From Ancient Aliens. Oh, yeah, I watch Ancient Aliens all the time. There's so many people out there. I mean, doctors and you know, very well-educated people that you would be really, really surprised at how many people have no trouble at all believing all this. So, you know, it's a lot more than is reflected in polls. I think people are ready for it.
I think so, too. And I think a lot of people will say, I knew it.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. Right. When it happens, that's why, you know, a lot, whatever percentage of the population believes in them, but there's another significant chunk. Let's divide it into thirds just to make it easy math. One third absolutely positively know something's going on. About a third of the people are way too skeptical. They don't think it's possible. But there's a third of the people that are, they say that, no, I don't believe in them, but if it actually happened, they would go, yeah, you know, I really did. I'm not surprised, you know. So that's two-thirds, really, that are ready or have absolutely no doubt about it. So we're in the majority now, I believe. I strongly believe that the people that know about this or are ready for it in one way or the other are well in the majority, which is why I think we've been sufficiently psychologically conditioned for ETs to make their appearance anytime now.
In your book, you talk about 23 countries that have already released official reports.
Right.
That's huge.
Yeah, yeah. And that's just the ones that have officially, I mean.
And that was as of a year ago.
Right, right. The amount of documentation that's out there would probably just stagger the average person if they looked into how many different people, and aside from those documents and the official documents that have been released, the number of very credible, high-ranking officials that are out there all over the world. I mean, for example, Soviet Union, right? Gorbachev, he basically said, yeah, they're real. Okay, this is the leader of the, you know, the other superpower at the time. So, yeah, the amount of information that's out there around the world, the amount of very credible witnesses that are out there, it leaves no doubt.
It will be a fascinating moment if this happens. Somewhat shocking for some, I think, but also just a wake-up call, I think, to a lot of other people.
It's going to be the most significant event in the history of human history. I mean, think about it.
Is it? Could it be?
Absolutely.
The second coming that we hear about with Jesus, could it be the second coming of the ETs?
It might very well be, especially in the sense of, you know, Jesus is supposed to come back and establish a 1,000-year reign where everybody is at peace and so on and so forth. I'm not talking about the
Antichrist.
No, I'm talking about Jesus Christ coming down. I'm not talking about the resurrections where, you know, all the Christians are taken away, because that's not really in the Bible. That was something invented in the 1800s by a preacher. But
the rapture.
Right, the rapture.
But you know,
if we found out, okay, that we don't need to do all this, like I said, a lot of the wars around the world are instigated by powers that be. If we were to find out that there are healthier ways of living, that there's healthier ways of generating electricity, that a lot of the stresses that we live under, we don't need to have. It would be basically a utopia. And this is the kind of information that they would probably bring with them. How I mean, but again, we already have the vast majority of this here on the planet already. This is why I say we don't need saviors to come down and save us.
Let's talk about end times when we come right back.